How's it going, amigos? Today on the show, we have a doubleheader. Joining us from WPIX 11, we have Greg Mocker. He's in studio, and he's going to give us a small glimpse of what it's like to be a journalist in New York City. And in the second half of the show, we have Elliot Katz. He is an author who feels that men need to be men, that men need to stop being so sensitive. And he's going to give us a take on his expertise in the realm of relationships. But before we get started, I'd like to tell you about our Patreon page. And that is a good way that you can support the show. So you can go over to patreon.com/podcastfortodaysman. Also, I'd like to tell you about Roan Jewelry. That's roanjewelry.com. Check them out. When you support our Patreon page, when you support Roan Jewelry, you are supporting this show. So stick around. We got a lot of fun things lined up. You do not want to be left out.
From A1 Studios in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, New York, this is the Rob Aguilar Show.
Greg Mocker, welcome to Radio Free Brooklyn. It is an honor to have you here today with us.
Well, I've talked to you before on TV for stories about your neighborhood, so I guess it's only fair, right?
I appreciate it. So I want to give the listeners a little glimpse into what it's like to be Greg Mocker, the guy on the train. You are, I want to say, a celebrity. You're a celebrity.
Very low-list one. I ride the train, and I know everybody thinks that's probably my folksy routine, but that's how I always was ever since I've been here. When I moved here, I wasn't doing TV anymore, and I was working kind of freelance for a video production company, and I was carting around all the equipment trying to get from here to there. So I understand what that celebrity word means, because I am lucky enough to get to create something and make it and put it on television every day and share it with everybody. And that gives us a connection, but that word makes me laugh.
Well, because a couple times that I've met with you on the street and we're doing stories for TV, we can't stand anywhere for 2 minutes with people yelling out of their car.
Hey, Mocker. Yeah, and I love that because it kind of reminds me of my grandpa, and he always joked about our last name, which is our real last name. So I like to hear it. It reminds me of him. I think he'd get a kick out of that in New York City, people say Mocker, and it's a good thing. I like that happens because it gives me a lot of story ideas, too, and then people share something. If people like that I ride the train and that I get to go bother the people that are in charge of the MTA, then I think that's kind of a neat thing to have created here together in New York City.
So where did you grow up? Where are you originally from?
From Youngstown, Ohio. So I'm a Midwestern guy. I guess all of us, some Ohioans and Midwesterners come here and we bring our sensibility and weirdness, I guess, but also, or just that kind of sense of wonder. I lived in a lot of other places just working around. That's what you do in the business, and ended up here.
Growing up in Ohio, at what point in your life did you say, I want to be a journalist, I want to be on TV one day? Like, when did that fire light up?
I think I knew what I didn't want to do. Like, I was never going to be an accountant, and I'd be a bad dentist.
You have a great smile.
Well, that has nothing to do with being a dentist, I guess. That has more to do with the dentist that I go to. I always was a curious guy. I like show and tell from an early age, just kind of looking around and wanting to understand kind of how things work, asking questions, being a pest. I've always been interested in government, just seeing how our tax dollars are put to use, the money that gets taken out of our paycheck gets spent, and how that process decides what those things are. I guess it just comes from basically being interesting. And I know that's kind of a weird story. I basically never thought about it. I guess I just kind of did it. Went to school for that at Ohio University, and it just kind of happened with some hard work and taking the risk, I guess.
So if you could go back in time, you've graduated college, you're ready to hit the streets.
I should have been a dentist. I should have been a dentist.
And you could go back and talk to Greg of that era. You're going to take over the world. You're going to be number one. What would you tell Greg?
Probably just enjoy the process a little bit more. I mean, I worked really hard, and you have to. I moved around a lot. I've lived in, was trying to count, I lost count of all the apartments that I've had, and that brings with it some nice things because you get to see the world. But moving around every 4 years from the time you're like 20 years old, you lose your connection to a lot of places. Sure. So maybe stop and just kind of and enjoy the moments a little bit more. The business breeds that, where you get somewhere and then it's time to look to another place. I've been here in New York for the longest time I've ever been anywhere, which is nice.
How long?
I started at Channel 11 in it's actually, tomorrow is, I think, my six-year anniversary.
Wow.
So it's and I lived here for 2 years before that.
With all the moving around, does it get tough to date?
I like to say that I'm undateable because I work a lot. And people always think that's an excuse for something. But I'm lucky to have a bunch of good friends, and I'm still connected to my family. They were visiting here just this week. So that's kind of an important thing to me. And when people ask me that question, it gets me in a little bit of trouble because then I start to have to explain things to some people that want it. So I sometimes say I'm dating New York. And I do have a crush on the Statue of Liberty.
Dating New York, that could mean so many things.
Right, and I think it's really complicated, so I leave that to the datables, and I'll be the guy on the subway.
Very nice. I want to go back a little bit to the thing about being noticed everywhere you go. Does it ever get annoying?
It's not everywhere, because it's not like I'm the president or the mayor or Justin Bieber. No, and it doesn't get annoying because I like to talk to people, and I think that that they make me better because I hear what's going on in their neighborhood, and I hear a problem that they saw that needs to be reported on. And maybe I'm old school like that, where it's still, you know, the beat reporter who gets to work a beat, and that's kind of nice to be the transit guy. I get to go to the meetings and experience how the leaders operate and get to look them in the eye. It's not just about a Twitter or an Instagram thing with me. I value the kind of personal connection and getting to know somebody. I just like to say I'm Greg, I'm Mocker, you know, and then we go with that.
All the stories that you've ever done, is there one that sticks out or an incident that you covered that really sticks out and say, you know, when we're writing a book on Greg one day, I want this story included in that?
There are about 1,000 of them, and I reference the same story because I think it was the first one when I was working in Augusta, Georgia. This would have been in 1996, 97 maybe. A little girl needed a blood transfusion and they were running low on her type. So we did a story and they ended up, you know, 20 people went down that night and they had seen it on the TV and maybe, you know, word spread because of that. So that thing always was something that was in my head because that was kind of that was a connection. There was a need here. We were able to report on it, and then there was some kind of action because the community kind of moved together.
Is there anything ever not exciting about the job?
Oh, like the traffic and the waiting for some equipment and getting here. Yeah, that's a frustrating thing. When things don't work, sometimes you're ready to go live and the signal drops out, or a cable doesn't work, or someone comes and yells at you behind your live shot. You just kind of have to be ready for anything.
Like when you have like that ear thing in.
Yeah, and they pull it out. But that's.
How do you handle that? Like, that would bug me if I'm like having a conversation with you and Tom over there is yelling stuff in my ear.
It's multitasking. Like,
there's this famous clip, Bill O'Reilly, where he's getting annoyed at whoever's yelling at him. He's like, get out of my ear! Get out! Do you ever want to do something like that?
That's a natural reaction to have. But I guess I just kind of picture it as a juggler. So I juggle a lot of things. So that's just kind of me. It is kind of a what you see is what you get. The guy on the TV, you know, I don't have to shave. I don't have to wear a tie. I used to actually dye my hair when I worked in Phoenix because that's what everybody did. And it's kind of nice to be at Pix 11 where I think we're neighbors and we get to connect in that kind of way. So, yeah, I'm like that weird guy that rides the subway. That's
that's
the way
awesome.
It is. And I deal with the technical aspects of it. I'm lucky to work with some good folks that kind of take care of us there.
Now, where can people interact with and talk to follow
Say
you?
Hello on a street. I find that's the best way that we can get to know people. I'm on email and Facebook and all those weird things now because that's kind of the way that we do it. But yeah, you can say hello, or I'm on. It's at Greg Mocker are all those handles, and or just turn on the TV one time and wave at me. I I can. Some, I
you
know
can
this,
feel it.
I,
can...
Yes, I always say that. Like, we can see you too. But so put on some clothes. But I think of myself as a guy who lives here in this town. And
do you feel like a New Yorker?
Yeah, whatever that is, because I think it is what it is to you, and I can't even maybe explain what it is. I guess I feel connected to this place more so than the other 90 places I might have lived.
So if someone says, "Where's home?" you say, "Oh,
it's where I am right then." Home is a couch. That is important.
Very.
Because
nice.
You have to be. You got to be ready for anything to kind of do this job. And I think even to be in this town all along, have admired all the riders. We're just trying to get to work. And sometimes getting to work is work around here. And that's something that I think about when I do my coverage, because I ride the train every day too. And occasionally I'll take a bus because it's important to see how these things, how they are.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of statistics about how stressful the commute is for New Yorkers. That's right up there with some of the most stressful things that we have to deal with as New Yorkers. The interesting thing about that whole thing is that although that's part of daily life, the stress of commuting, as far as like depression rates and suicide rates, we're like the lowest. So I think it says a lot about the character of the people that live in the city. Although life is stressful, although commuting to work is stressful, we kind of, I don't know, level off. Where...
And there are many beautiful things to do here. There's, walking around can be a pleasant experience. There's something new to see just walking into the place here. There are a couple vintage clothing stores over there. It's hard to be bored here. You just go for a walk.
Yeah, because there's so many things to discover.
Find a new restaurant or, find a new pizza place. I'm like, Dave and I will probably pick a place tonight that we haven't been to before.
There's great pizza here, right? I think there's like a city famous.
There's Tony's that's up on the corner of Knickerbocker and DeKalb. So it's about a block away from here, about a block and a half away. Yeah, and I had I was coming in through customs once. The customs guy, he saw that I lived in Brooklyn. He's like, "Do you know Tony's on the corner of Nick?" I was like, "Yeah, I live a half a block away."
Yeah. And it's a connection because there's a million reasons that people are here and a million things that make up people. And we look for the things that we recognize and want to learn about each other. And even if it's pizza, because like we can work from that.
Yep.
Greg, I want to thank you for taking the time to come out all the way to Bushwick, Brooklyn to hang out with us.
And we get to cover this. We'll have this on the news too, because that's, I met you talking about a neighborhood thing, and this is a New York story.
And I totally feel that vibe about what you're saying. I'm your neighbor. There's this approachable vibe about you that anyone can just kind of come up and say hello. And I've seen you do it. We're in the middle of the street, and we were doing a story about Sunset Park, and this car at the red light stop, and the guy wanted to shake your hand, and you walked over and shook his hand. He's like, "Can I have a card?" You gave me a business card, and you made that guy's day.
I he made mine because we got to talk to, and maybe I'll get a story from that, or I'll learn something. I think that people are interesting.
Fantastic, and you're very interesting, and we want to thank you for taking the time to come out to Bushwick, Brooklyn, to visit us here at Radio Free Brooklyn, and we invite everyone to follow you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and to always watch your segments on WPIX.
Always looking for stories.
Make sure you follow Greg on Twitter, on Instagram, and Facebook. And up next, we have author Elliot Katz, who has a very interesting take on how men should behave. He feels that men need to stop being so sensitive with their women and start acting like men. So this should be a very interesting conversation. Elliot, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Elliot, you have an interesting point of view on women and their either lack of respect for men or something maybe that has changed in recent times in our culture, where I find a lot of guys want to be sensitive and want to listen. That's a big word that I hear a lot of therapists say. Listen, you have to listen to your partner. You have to listen to your wife, your girlfriend. It's important to listen. And men need to be sensitive to that. And sometimes I find it strange because if we're being told that that's what we have to do, then that means that what we're doing naturally or what comes natural to us isn't acceptable. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's a very common situation. You know, men today, I have been very confused by all these messages about listening, being sensitive, developing your feminine side, although we don't hear that much anymore. So what does it mean to be sensitive? I mean, you can be sensitive to the other person's feelings and listen to what they say. But ultimately, the most important thing to remember is a woman really wants a man who's a leader, who shows leadership. She doesn't want a man who's always asking her what to do, who wants her to make the decisions. You know, a lot of men think, oh, I'm being sensitive, I'm being non-controlling, I'll let her make the decisions. And a lot of these decisions don't really matter to me. No, a woman wants a man who shows leadership. She really has no respect for a man who shows no leadership. You know, it's not a matter of making every decision and being a tyrant, but women are just fed up with men who show no leadership and make no decisions and expect them to make all the decisions. I've even had like single women tell me that a guy will ask them out just to go for a cup of coffee, and then he says, well, where do you want to go? What time should I pick you up? And like, it's a big turnoff. You've already showing you can't make any decisions. How are you going to run a family? You know, in a family life, there's challenges, situations you need to deal with, and you're going to leave all the problem solving to the wife. Big turnoff.
I think that women find that leadership, or a man that shows that he can be a leader, I think they find that very, very attractive, which is why guys who are successful in their lives, who are successful in their careers, who are confident. Those are the guys that always seem to attract the most women, regardless of their looks. How many times have we seen really good-looking women with guys who are maybe average or below average in looks, but they carry themselves with a certain level of confidence? You can tell that they're leaders in what they do in their daily lives. And so that totally backs up what you're saying. But it's almost like on the women's side of things, it's almost like a little, I don't know if they contradict each other, because although that's what women want, when you hear them talk about what they want, they talk about wanting guys who are sensitive, guys who listen to their feelings. And it's almost like a juggling act, kind of. And the interesting thing about it is that guys, when they're trying to talk to a particular woman, a guy talking to a girl, or they're starting to date, he kind of maybe at first shows this sensitive side, or he listens to what she says. Well, because he's just basically trying to get in her pants. but then as time goes by, we go back to what's natural to us. And then you find this everlasting historical battle between men and women. So is it that we have to balance the two and kind of be sensitive and be leaders at the same time? I don't know if the male mind works that way. I think sometimes we're very one track mind. What do you think about that?
Well, it's what you describe is very common. So when a woman says she wants a man who's sensitive and who listens and talks about his feelings, you know, does she really want a guy who's going to constantly, you know, talk about, you know, how his boss is against him, he really pours his guts out all the time? No, it's a big, big turnoff. I think, you know, when you talk about being sensitive, I think people feel close to someone who has, you know, talked about personal things in their life, right? That's a way to get close to someone. But still, they don't want a man who's going to always, like, be pouring their guts out, talking about everything that's gone wrong in their life and presenting themselves as a victim. It's a big, big turnoff, because don't forget, a woman wants to look up to a man. She wants to feel he's strong, he's able to protect her. And if he's just, like, presenting himself as, poor me, listen to my feelings, I've been, you know, beat down my whole life, big, big turnoff. She really wants a man who's a leader. And, you know, it's interesting you say about a man who's successful in a career as a leader, because sometimes you have a situation with men who are very successful and leaders of businesses, and yet when they come home, they're totally passive, and they're not leaders at all at home. And it's a big, big turnoff. I tell men will say to me, well, you know, I work hard all day, I'm really tired, and I want to go home and just relax. And I say, just like you want, you know, you work hard at your job because you want to provide a nice life for your wife and family. In the same way, you've got to save energy when you come home to show leadership at home, because you want a good home. You want your family to be happy, and they need you to fulfill that role as the leader. They really want that. And it's not about being a controlling tyrant. It's the opposite. You know, a controlling person is, you know, insecure, only thinks about themselves. A leader is thinking about the greater good of his family. Is he's thinking he knows what's going on. He sees the problems. Figures, what can we do to solve this problem, and takes initiative and that gets it done. That's what a woman wants. I mean, she doesn't want a guy who just leaves every decision to her, solving every problem. She really feels like she's a single parent. I've heard that lots of times, like where a wife will say, I feel like a single parent. I don't really have another parent to raise these children with.
How do we help guys who are stuck in that rut where, for whatever reason, whether it's something that they learned as kids, maybe because their fathers were that way, where they don't take on that leadership role, or maybe they've been listening to too many of these other type of talk shows where they're taught that they have to allow the woman to make all the decisions. Can a guy like that come out of that rut where he's not being a leader?
Well, he obviously definitely he can. But the thing is, a lot of men just aren't aware. The interesting thing about my book is, you know, a lot of men will disagree with me, but women will say, yeah, that's the kind of man I want. But the man will say, oh, no, that's not what women want. I think they've heard, just saying, this generation of men, a lot of them grew up without fathers, you know, in divorce situations, or even if they, you know, came from intact families, their fathers were working or didn't really play the role of a leader. And so they grew up without strong male role models. They go to school, most of the teachers are women. They don't really have a male role model there. And then they watch television with all these shows where men are portrayed as buffoons or incompetent and incapable and really can't, you know, who don't have a clue about how to show leadership in their families. And so for a lot of men, it's just like, oh, they're like, this is like, I've had that experience. Like they'll say, oh, no one's ever told me this before. So that's why I wrote the book, is I want to change the men of the world one man at a time. And how do you show leadership? You know what's going on in your family. You know what's going on in your relationship. You ask a woman out. You have be a man with a plan. You show you can take the lead and say, well, from what I know about this woman and what I know about myself, I think we would both enjoy going to see this movie or going to see this concert. So let's, you know, you come with a plan. You say, we'd like to go out to see this concert. I'll come pick you up. 8 o'clock. I won't be late. Be ready. You know, like, be a man with a plan. So many women, they appreciate that. And it's so surprising, even simple things like asking a woman, oh, where do you want to go eat? Like they say, hey, this guy can't make a decision. This can't show take the lead. But the man thinks, oh, I'm showing her I'm non-controlling. I'm willing to listen. You know, those aren't major things. Show her that you could be a man with a plan. And if you're proposing something, you know, off base with her, like, If you're proposing going to eat in a fish restaurant and she has an anaphylactic reaction to the smell of fish, she'll tell you, we can't go there. but really, take the lead. Really, women appreciate a man who takes the lead. It doesn't mean, you know, sometimes she'll come up with a suggestion. It doesn't mean she wants you to make all the decisions. But just if you leave everything to her and you think, oh, I'm being so nice, it's a big term. But then they can't understand why the women aren't interested. That's the irony.
How did you come up with this theory of women wanting this?
It's a good question. Okay, I was married for 10 years, and then I got divorced. And like a lot of people, at first I blamed the other person. And then I came to the point of realizing, well, what do I have to learn from this? I don't want to go through this again. So I set out on a journey. What does it mean to be a man? You know, we hear all these confusing messages. I thought I was doing, you know, all these things, being sensitive, listening, trying to please her. It didn't work. So the first thing I realized is, like, we're all confused. You know, I thought, it's not just me. Like, I talked to other men. We're all talking about the same thing. We're trying so hard. We just keep doing it more and more, and it's not working. Then I started reading books on relationships. And I read so many books, and they really didn't say anything about how to be a man in a relationship. As when I turned to the teachings, like the timeless wisdom, the timeless insights that for generations – fathers and other older male role models used to teach younger men about being a man, I was blown away, because part of my journey was listening to what women said, and they were saying the same thing, that men need to show leadership, they need to make decisions, they need to take responsibility. You know, the last thing a woman wants is a man who blames her or just doesn't step up to the plate and take responsibility for what's going on. And often men will avoid making decisions because they think, well, you know, if she makes a decision, then she can't blame me for making a bad decision. But They don't realize people, women will look at men and say, she wants a man who takes responsibility. She doesn't want a man who blames her. You know, if something goes wrong, big, big turnout. Don't ever blame a woman. You're the man. You're responsible for what's going on. And it really connected because I would meet all these divorced men and they're all blaming their wives for everything that went wrong in their marriage. And nearly nobody had any sympathy for them because as much as we believe in gender equality, we have a natural instinct to say, you're the man. You are responsible for what goes on in your home. If this was going on and you let it go on, well, you are responsible. So since I felt, well, we're going to be held responsible for what goes on, we better show leadership and really, if you see a problem, deal with it and not just say, well, I'll be able to blame her when it goes wrong.
No, that's a great point. And it's definitely eye-opening because I always thought when something goes wrong, it's always their fault, but I guess not.
I know. It's easy. You know, really, so many times men will say, oh, you know, she pressured me into this. I've heard this many times and I had the same experience. She pressured me into this. I knew it was wrong, but I gave in. And when it turned wrong, just like I knew it would, you know, I blamed her. I've heard that so many times. And you have to say, well, you know what? People say you're responsible because if you knew it was wrong, you shouldn't have let it go on.
But on the same token, though, do they bear any responsibility as well? Because it seems like a big burden to also carry. Can the leadership of a house or can the leadership of a family be shared with the woman in any way?
You know what? Of course it can be shared, but I think what we're talking about is not taking responsibility. When a man doesn't take responsibility, when he just wants to blame his wife or his in-laws or, you know, or his wife's friends. You know, I heard that a lot, you know, people, men who are divorced, well, they blame their wife, they blame their wife's friends, they blame the in-laws, blame. And they never said, well, what do I have to learn from this? What should I have done differently? So that's really what it's about. You're just going to blame her. It's really, it makes it a very negative situation. And she feels, well, how can she respect this man? I want him to be the man of the house. And yet all he's doing is blaming me for everything that has gone wrong. It's a big turn of it. She loses respect. You know, if something goes wrong, the man just step forward and say, okay, we got to fix this situation. This is what I'm going to do to fix this situation. Then his wife will look up to him and admire him.
Is it ever their fault or is it always the guy's fault? Is it always the man's fault?
Well, you know, it's really not about fault. I mean, the man has to be a leader. It's like, you know, a leader of a country, if one of his staff do something wrong and it ends up like a big mess, do you ever see that the president say, well, you know what, my Secretary of Defense really screwed up there. It's not my fault. No, I'm the president. I'm going to deal with it. And same thing in a company. You know, president of a company could say, you know, there's a problem here. I am taking charge to resolve it. You know, blaming and find you saying, well, it was her fault. What good? It doesn't help the situation. And really, it's part of our human nature to look at a man who starts blaming his wife and say, well, you know, what was your role in this? People just naturally don't have sympathy for men who blame their wives for problems. And so since it's not going to get you any sympathy and it's really not going to help you, be the man, step forward, take charge, see a problem. Maybe you gave in to something she wanted and it was wrong. Okay, you're in this situation together, deal with it. Take charge and deal with it. Show that leadership that you didn't show before when you should have said, no, we're not doing this. And no amount of pressure is going to change it because this is the wrong thing to do.
Are there things that guys can do to start forming habits where they can begin to become leaders in their relationships?
I think that, you know, one of the things that I did, I think, and I tell other men to do is really catch yourself. Like, so often you feel like just saying, oh, what do you want to do? Or, you know, sometimes men will, like, give a woman a choice. Like, okay, would you like to go to restaurant A or restaurant B? And they think, well, they sort of made a decision because they've narrowed it down to two. But really, you're asking the woman to make the decision. So just, like, catch yourself putting the decision on the other person. Just say, well, I think we should do this. For the following reasons, I think you'll like the food there. I think you'll really enjoy it there. Yeah, what do you think? You want to go? And then if she doesn't want to, she'll say no. But don't start like saying, well, you want to A, B, or C, because really you're not making the decision. So the main thing, like any kind of behavior they're trying to change, is just catch yourself. Like putting it to the other person to make the decision. Social leadership, and just think about what would be you think would be the best choice and propose it. It's not like saying we have to do this or else.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring picking a restaurant, because I hear this from my friends. I think it's one of the most common dilemmas ever. It's picking a place to go to dinner or lunch. A guy will ask his wife or his girlfriend, where do you want to go? And the woman will reply, I don't know, anywhere, I don't care, you pick it. And then the guy starts going through choices. And he'll say, well, let's go eat Italian food. And she'll respond, I'm not in the mood for Italian food. Okay, let's go to Chinese restaurant. Oh, I'm not in the mood for a Chinese restaurant. And it's a never-ending thing. But if we listen to kind of what you're saying, maybe we should just pick the place from the beginning and say, hey, we're going to eat Mexican food tonight.
Absolutely, you could do that. Or if you're accustomed to that routine of you want to go to place A, no, place B, no, place C, no. Where do you want to go? I don't know.
People end up having fights over this. It's crazy.
I know the situation. So what you do is if you just say, okay, you've gone through the three choices, then just say, okay, let's go to place A and let's just go. And like, don't argue about it. Just go. Let's go. And another thing to do is on the same time of learning to become a leader is sometimes, you know, you're in a situation, the woman has been making, you know, the man hasn't made decisions, the woman's making all decisions. So if she makes a decision, because that's what she's accustomed to doing, don't say, oh, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the complete opposite because I'm going to show you I'm the leader. That's stupid. That's undermining her. That's not really going to show that you're a leader. The main thing is look for situations. So we talked about choosing a restaurant, but other situations in the relationship, in your home, let's say, here's a problem that hasn't been dealt with. Step forward and deal with it. Show the leadership and just look for those situations. You know, maybe a problem with a child that maybe needs remedial help, and you say, well, okay, I'm going to work with him, or I'm going to find someone to work with that child. Look, be aware of the problems and find solutions. That's showing leadership. Then your wife will you'll be her hero. She'll admire you and respect you.
So just, I guess, to kind of recap, these habits or these little key things that we can do, these are things that we can learn from your book.
Right. The book talks about, the book's in the form of a story of a grandfather teaching his grandson the insights on being a man, being a husband, a father, that were really that the grandson didn't learn from his own father. And just things like you showing leadership, all the different types of situations, you know, dealing with, you know, financial situations. Like so many men think if they just could earn enough money, they could buy enough things for their wives and their wives will be happy. And, you know, it just doesn't happen. It just, because, you know, you can't get into that rut and just taking full responsibility, not blaming, making decisions, being aware of what's going on. Really, all these things that when you start doing those things, you'll see there will be a change. Like I've got such positive feedback from the book. Like people will say, you know, my wife has been saying to me, she wishes I acted like a man. And I really didn't know what she meant. But when I read your book, I understood this is what she wants. She wants a man who takes charge, who makes decisions, you know, who doesn't let, you know, some men are in these situations where their wives are always putting them down, insulting them, especially in front of other people. Says, well, you have to decide that you're entitled to being treated well. And as the man, you have to set the standards of like what's going on in your family and what in your home. So just raise the bar. What is acceptable behavior? And then she will respect you because, you know, a person that lets himself be treated badly, you know, the person just has no respect for them. But that's another thing I deal with in the book.
Finances, I think that's one of the top possible five reasons why couples break up or get a divorce. If you can manage money correctly and maybe set a budget, we see this a lot, especially here in the States, where people live way above their means. I think that was actually, I want to say maybe over the weekend, I saw this interesting study done here in New York City where I don't know if it's the culture here in New York City that people feel that they need to have certain things in order to fit into this culture. And they end up spending $80,000-$90,000 above their means, and they get themselves in debt. And married couples end up getting divorced because living above your means, spending more than you have, and getting yourself in debt adds stress to any relationship.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I say in the book, and this is a quote that was written actually 2,000 years ago, it says that financial stress in a marriage will bring up problems that would not have otherwise have arisen. And he says, don't get into things like investments or anything that maybe in the long term will be profitable, but in the short term it's going to cause stress in your marriage. It's just not worth it. It can do a lot of damage to marriages. And I can tell you a lot of the divorces I've seen, it's been over money. It's one person, you know, won't get a job. One person runs up enormous debts on the credit cards. I remember one fellow I knew, he told me, this was years ago, told me his wife had ran up like $50,000 on the credit cards. And I looked at him, I said, well, and he was blaming her, right? He said, well, how could you let that go on? I would never let that go on. I know, you know, credit card use just for the convenience of not having to carry cash. That's all. You pay it at the end of the month. That's all. You don't start borrowing on it. But there again, like he blamed her, and he could blame her, but how did he let it go on? That's it. He's got to say to himself, you know, this is wrong. I'm not going to let it go on. No matter how much yelling or pressure you put on me, this is wrong. We can't let it go on.
And hence they're taking a leadership role.
Absolutely. I mean, these are divorces. These are, you know, it's very common cause of divorce where just people are just spending and they get so much debt and and like I say, it brings out everything else. All the other problems just come out because of that financial stress.
Yeah, things come up that maybe shouldn't come up because they're so far long gone. But when people are upset and in a rage, other things come on, and you're just piling on to the problem, just adding more fuel to the fire and causing a big explosion.
The ideas in the book are really, it's a lot of them are just what, like generations ago, fathers used to teach their sons about being a man, and it's just been so lost. And you know, today there's so many articles, and I'm sure you've seen them. Like you read all these, you know, talk about how men are confused today about what it means to be a man, and you know, and like so every few years there's new ideas about what it means to be a man, and you know, like the old ideas about a man being strong, about responsibility and leadership. It's like, you know, we don't want to drive young men crazy, say, well, you got to do this, you got to do this. But this is the things that men have to develop. I mean, I think for most men, these things don't come naturally. But like part of developing yourself from boy into man is learning to take responsibility, you know, show leadership. And when a young man gets married, you suddenly, well, you know, it hits you, all these responsibilities. Suddenly you're responsible for all these people. And, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. So, but but part of that is learning. You grow as you learn to handle it and become a leader. You learn, and it's personal growth. It's really a journey of growth. I tell people, you know, one of the things I talk about in the book, I just say, is that the difference between macho and manly. You know, people sort of use them interchangeably. Macho is they're actually opposites. Macho is very showy, self-centered. Manly is a very positive word. Like one of the meanings of the word virtue is manly strength. Like it, you know, it's a person who takes responsibility, has strength in his conviction, has integrity. It's a very positive word. And so I tell people, you know, I learned what it means to be manly by looking it up in the dictionary, because that's the meaning of the word manly. And so it's certainly something we have to strive for. It doesn't come naturally to most men, I believe. It's something we have to strive for and develop ourselves as men.
So something that you touched on before with regards to feelings and guys spilling their feelings out to their women and how that can be a turnoff. So is that to say that men should never share how they feel to their women, like, or when they're not feeling well because things aren't going great at work and they're just having a crappy day, or they're going through a crappy rut at work or whatever? Is that something that they should keep inside and just share it with the guys when they're having beer at the pub? Or can they tell their women but just not say it too often so that they don't get into that cycle of being weak, or how would one handle something like
that? Well, I think it's a good point. One is, you know, it's good to talk to other men, because other men can be more supportive. A woman, when you start talking about problems, she might start being, you know, you don't want to appear weak. And it's really a matter of degree. You know, I was doing an interview once where one of the hosts asked me, is when a man cries, is that a sign of strength? So I said, well, you know, if someone you love dies and, you know, you're not a rock, you know, it's sad and you're crying and you lost someone you love. Okay, it's okay. But if you're coming home every day crying about something that happened at work, you know, she's just going to be completely turned off and just feel like she doesn't have a man. And, you know, sometimes if you really need to cry, like maybe just do it by yourself, you know, like you just to get it out. It's you know, she a wife wants to look up to her husband. She wants to feel that he's strong and he's her hero. But, you know, if you're going to be crying all the time about things, it's just a big turnoff.
Yeah, I mean, even for a guy to see another guy crying, I can think of a situation where a friend of mine went to dinner with one of his friends, and that guy was going through a divorce, and they went out to dinner to a bar to have a couple of drinks. And my buddy was telling me how embarrassed he was when during the dinner this guy was just started to cry, how upset he was.
Yeah.
And to the point where my buddy wanted to run out of there. And I said, bro, I don't know how you handle that. I would have like shook some sense and said, cut it out. Cut the crying. There's no need for it.
Right, right.
Yeah, you guys are done. But, you know, think of the possibilities. You'll find another woman. And he wanted to smack some sense into him. But yeah, I can understand if for a guy to see another guy crying like that can be borderline embarrassing. I can only imagine what a woman would feel like when she sees a guy break down. So, Elliot, where can people get in touch with you if they want to interact with you, whether it's on social media or a website?
Okay, my website is Award Press, awardpress.com, and you can email me through the website. And my book, Being the Strong Man a Woman Wants, Timeless Wisdom on Being a Man, is available on Amazon and Kobo and iBooks and also in bookstores. And if the bookstores are sold out, you can ask them and they'll order it for you and get it to you pretty quickly. But just so you know, the book is available both in paperback and as an ebook, so on like Amazon, places like that. So, but you can go to my website and just email me if you have questions, comments. I always appreciate hearing comments. It's rewarding to hear, you know, when you feel people feel your book has made a difference. So that's very rewarding.
Fantastic. Elliot, thank you so much for your time. This was a lot of fun. We encourage everyone to go out and get this book and be that leader. Be that leader that she wants you to be. It's possible. You can learn it if you are struggling with that. And Elliot's book will share some wisdom with you. Elliot, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
This has been an A1 Broadcasting podcast. I'm
that makes you go crazy. Dig the flow and yo, don't be lazy. Take off your shirt, take off your sneakers. Feel the bass that comes at your speakers. Cause the music only gets louder. Keeping you dancing, what I'm proud of. Like a weekend or a black. I'm not a racist, so the hell with that. There's only one reason I came to party. To see you dancing with your body. Up and down, down and up. This ain't no time for you to stop. So keep on moving. Way, I'm gonna keep your hype to a track of a different type. So just move and groove, let your body flow. Cause I'm the man in control. To the point where I rule the dance floor. Ripping up stages, making you want more of my music and the lyrics. Sounds so good, you wanna come near it. Ray Art is on the way to the top. If house is a crime, then go get a cop. That's how I'm living, way above the law. So keep on moving as I get more. Here's a procedure for you to proceed. With my foresight, I know what you need. Got it good, get going. Hustle is the juice that keeps you flowing. I like harmony with a clear white coat. It's just like an antidote. So listen close and pay attention. Hooked up by the kids' connection. Not the impotence, stay stuck with Boricua Posse, known as Ray Art. And don't escape for the 1990s decade. It's a new house with a funky beat, guaranteed to make you move your feet. Throwing lyrics in your direction, something new, close to perfection. As you're walking and talking and moving and grooving and shaking and baking, till there's no debating. So party hard, enjoy the new sound. Like a circle, we won't be around. At your service, at your front door, give you more than what you bargained for. It's the song of the 90s, and you can call it Boricua Posse. Relax yourself and have no doubt. For the people in the house, let me hear you shout.